Hot Business on Hot 102.7 with Jeremy Maggs and MoneyWeb.
Now, foreign direct investment into South Africa hitting nearly 100 billion rand in 2023, but that still only represents around 1.5% of GDP. The reality is that local entrepreneurs continue to face significant challenges, inconsistent regulation, policy uncertainty. The list goes on, I guess, exchange controls, infrastructure constraints. These barriers not only deter investors, but also limit the growth potential of South African business. Now, some business owners, interestingly, are responding by setting up strategic interests offshore. What's the rationale, you might ask? Well, access to more stable, investor-friendly jurisdictions that offer financial operational, and I guess tax advantages. So I want to discuss this in a little more detail, the practical implications of going offshore. And I'm in conversation tonight with Lance Lawson, business development consultant at Sovereign Trust South Africa. Lance, good evening to you and a very warm welcome. So what is driving this interest in offshore structuring? Is it about survival, expansion, or just escaping local instability, or maybe a combination of all of it?
Hi, good evening, Jeremy, and good evening to all your listeners. Yes, it's probably a good combination of all three, but I see a lot at the moment of people wanting to expand into new markets abroad, because obviously there's greater opportunities there and they're looking to grow their businesses in other jurisdictions. So that is pretty much what I'm seeing at the moment.
So, Lance, also regulatory and infrastructure barriers, and we can talk about opportunity just to grow in a moment, but how much of the move also is about navigating a very difficult exchange control regime? That's got to be a big factor, surely.
Exchange control is a huge factor because a lot of exporting businesses, for example, exporting entrepreneurs in South Africa who are exporting, firstly, the goods are priced in an open market, and then the fluctuations in the rand make it extremely difficult to budget locally. So expanding offshore to sort of get around the exchange control limitations is one of the main reasons I see as well for exporting entrepreneurs.
Let's circle back to where the big opportunity is. So you have a local entrepreneur, they might be facing all of these difficulties that we've spoken about, yet they're still seeing opportunity overseas. What kind of opportunities? And surely those opportunities come with a big inherent risk.
So imagine, for example, you're a tech entrepreneur and you've built a platform that services, say, the auto market. It's great to have that expanded and rolled out across the country, maybe Southern Africa as well. But perhaps you also would like to expand into Southeast Asia. So it makes no sense to keep your footprint wholly in South Africa in that instance. It makes a whole lot more sense to expand into, say, Hong Kong or Singapore and then enter those markets through that jurisdiction.
All right. So let's assume you've made the decision then that you see value in moving offshore. Are there specific criteria that a business owner should use to evaluate whether offshore structuring is suitable? And maybe as a follow-up to that, even before you've asked it, are there types of businesses that this makes more sense for?
I think, yeah. So broadly, the cost benefit would be the first thing to consider, because obviously these offshore structures come with an inherent cost. You have to set them up and manage them. So you've got to look at the cost of those structures versus what it would save you and how it would affect your business and generate more revenue for your business. And then the types of businesses, generally speaking, any type of business with an offshore or cross-border strategy.
All right.
Any business that wants to look across border.
Let's talk destination now, Lance, if we can. So often we hear about jurisdictions like Mauritius, and I think, if I'm not mistaken, even the Isle of Man. How do you make a decision there, and are there key differences between those two geographies? How does one choose the right fit?
Definitely. I mean, there are massive key differences. The main thing one has to consider are the treaty networks. So as you might know, South Africa and the OECD, they've signed double taxation agreements with many, many countries. And there's a whole network of countries that have double taxation agreements. Some have more than others. So what you want to do is you want to consider your revenue flows, where your money is going to go to and where it's going to come from, and then the nature of the relationship between those countries according to the double taxation agreement. So that has a major impact on the choice of jurisdiction.
So Lance, how then do you manage tax compliance against multiple jurisdictions?
So you manage tax compliance, obviously, by understanding and keeping abreast of the tax treaties between the countries. And part of Sovereign's value offering is that we are professionals, and that's what we do. We advise clients and we keep abreast of the changes in regulations and legislation that help clients to be in compliance with the laws. So the other part I just want to mention is South Africa has controlled foreign companies and place of effective management laws and transfer pricing. So it's not only the treaties, but it also, you know, transfer pricing laws that could affect your cross-border affairs.
And Lance, in your experience then, where do most South African businesses trip up when they try to set up offshore without the right guidance?
They try to do everything themselves, and then they trip up in the CFC laws and the POM laws, and then SARS basically attaches the assets as if they would be taxed here in South Africa. And it sort of undoes the whole purpose of why you're trying to set the structure up offshore. Not only for tax purposes, but generally, you know, you want to have the business operate efficiently in the foreign jurisdiction. So you incur all the costs and you go through all the compliance processes to set it up. But, you know, maybe you don't do the contracts correctly, or you don't do the compliance, the SARS returns properly, or the annual returns abroad properly. And therefore, you kind of undo the whole structure and it becomes a bit of a mess. So that's the kind of thing that we see a lot of. Sovereign obviously offers a, you know, free health check for structures that are in existence to kind of, you know, help point out to clients the potential pitfalls that they face.
Just a final one then, in practical terms, how long does it take to establish an offshore structure that is fully compliant and also operational?
Sure. Yeah, it's a lot longer than people realize. It takes anything between 3 to 6 months because of the huge compliance burden. We have to go through a serious amount of due diligence with regards to AML and money laundering, and make sure that it's, you know, there's nothing untoward. And then there's a lot of the compliance with opening the bank accounts, etc. And then there's ongoing compliance. So to submit an application to set up an offshore structure consists of no less than a document pack of 100 pages. It's a serious amount of work.
It sounds as if that really is the case, but some valuable lessons nonetheless if you are an entrepreneur or a business and you're thinking of a geographical relocation. Lance Lawson, thank you very much indeed from Sovereign Trust South Africa. I do appreciate the insight tonight. Thank you so much.
Hot Business on Hot 102.7 with Jeremy Maggs and MoneyWeb.